and say this is KHENLP 106.9 Salida, Colorado. And this evening I have two great guests lined up. As my co-host this evening, I have Maggie Rodden, who has a program called Unsolicited Opinion on Republic Broadcasting Network. And then our guest is Tom DeWeese, and he's one of the nation's leading advocates of individual liberty, free enterprise, private property rights, personal privacy, back-to-basics education, and American sovereignty and independence. A native of Ohio, he's been a candidate for the Ohio legislature, served as editor of two newspapers, and has owned several businesses since the age of 23. In 1989, Tom led the only privately funded election observation team to the Panamanian elections. And in 2006, Tom was invited to Cambridge University to debate the issue of the UN before the Cambridge Union, a 200-year-old debating society. Today, he serves as founder and president of the American Policy Center and editor of the DeWeese Report. For 40 years, Tom DeWeese has been a businessman, grassroots activist, writer, and publisher. As such, he has always advocated a firm belief in man's need to keep moving forward while protecting our constitutionally guaranteed rights. So I want to say hi, Maggie.
Hi.
And
thanks for having me.
Yes, you're welcome. And then, hi, Tom. And did you have anything you would like to add to that bio that we just...
Like that long resume?
Yes. That's not long compared to some of them I've seen.
But it's a lot.
I'll tell you what, a lot
of stuff in there.
Yes, there is.
I've been an activist for 43 years, and one evening when someone introduced me saying that, when I got up to speak, I said, you know, 43 years ago, when I started all this, I never dreamed that today my opponent would be a force that wants to destroy human society, nor did I ever think that I would hear the average American say, yep, sounds good to me. So, you know, it's been a long time.
Well, I will have to admit that the UN and Agenda 21 was relatively new to me, but I believe you write for different publications as well, don't you?
Well, my materials are sent out to a lot of news websites. People pick it up and post it, so, yeah.
So like News with Views and some other...
Canadian Free Press is one. News with Views is the largest one. Been on hundreds of them, really.
Okay. All right. Maggie, I'm going to let you start off and see if there's somewhere you'd like to go with the beginning of this, since it's through your program that I last was able to connect with Tom so we could get him on this interview. So.
Oh, all right. Well, sure. Tom, where would you like to begin? What's the latest stuff you've been tackling? I know there's never a dull moment in all the different things you're up to. So where would you like to begin? What's something pertinent that we need to know about you want to tell the listeners from Mel's audience?
Well, there's incredible movement going on in the country about Agenda 21, and it's going in every direction. We've got legislation. We've got legislators who are finally listening, and they're introducing legislation. We've got county commissioners who are coming up with solutions for things and listening. My audiences now are growing, and there are more and more elected officials in the audience listening, which we never had before over the 18 years or so we've been fighting Agenda 21. And I think the incredible thing that's happening is those who are the proponents of this, who are pushing it, are really kind of getting into a panic, and because we're rising up everywhere across the country, and they're now taking actions to try to counter us. And I almost find it comical, the things that I'm beginning to see. I just got a report about an hour ago. From the American Planning Association, one of the organizations that is in almost every community in the country that's pushing Agenda 21, and they've created a glossary for the public. They're now changing the words that are used in public meetings because of us. it says in here words that are causing problems are things like collaboration and consensus, the Delphi technique, density, public visioning, public-private partnerships, smart growth, stakeholders, sustainability. So they don't want to use those words anymore in public meetings because that gets our protesters riled up and gives them trouble. So the result's still the same, but they don't want to use the words anymore.
Sure. Well, you know, I don't know if you saw this yet, if it came through your mailbox yet, Tom, or you had a chance to see it, but I got an email this morning, and it was from the group that's really fighting hard out in the San Francisco area, that the regional planners wanted to have an off-the-record meeting with just the four of them, the ones who are most vocal, like Rosa Corey and Mimi Steele and Heather Gass and another lady whose name I don't readily recall, but they actually asked to just meet with them. They just wanted to have a little meeting, Tom. And, of course, they wrote back to them that, you know, they were not going to have a meeting that wasn't an open meeting that the public was invited to. They had no intention of meeting with them. But I thought it was rather telling that these people are kind of panicking. I think that word that you chose, panic, is a very appropriate choice of adjectives for what's happening. I believe you're right.
Yeah, I think so. You know, they will always use these words. They'll say that, well, we've had public meetings, and the public has had input to put into these things. Like, everybody in the community is involved in this effort. And the truth of the matter is, whether they want to say the words or not, what they're using are these consensus meetings, and a consensus meeting with a trained facilitator who is trained in psychology. They already know what they want the outcome of that meeting to be, and his job is to lead that group down that path to where they meet that goal at the end, pre-planned ending. And they want, if he's done his job well, then everybody in the room will think it was their idea. Look what we did. And this is the process that they use to put this stuff in place, to have these public meetings. And they're designed specifically to have no debate, no open discussion. If anybody breaks away and doesn't play ball with them, then they may be removed from the meeting, they may be ridiculed during the meeting, or ignored. And, you know, that's not debate, that's not open discussion, but that's what they do. And then they come out and say, well, we had a public meeting. And so what we're doing now is we're teaching people how to deal with these meetings. And, there was a hysterical story in South Carolina where yet another one of these unheard-of non-governmental organizations suddenly pops up and says, you know, we got a new plan to lock away another several thousand acres of land, and we're going to have this open consensus meeting. And 100 property owners showed up and started asking them questions like, who are you people? Where'd you come from? Who funds you? They adjourned the meeting. 2 weeks later, they try to do it again. The same 100 property owners show up, and the same thing starts to happen, whereupon the chairman of the meeting, the facilitator of the meeting, gets up and says, I'm adjourning this meeting because it has reached the wrong consensus.
Oh, don't you love it?
I do. I do.
Oh, that's a classic. Yeah, they really can't handle the truth, Tom, can they? It's amazing.
No.
Well, Tom, did you find also that did they get with the press on some of these meetings? Because I'm finding in my area that some of the way these meetings are written up makes it almost sound like they are bending in the direction of the group that is coming in holding these meetings instead of being a truly unbiased reporting of what takes place at these meetings.
I'm sorry, can you excuse me for a minute? I've got a police officer at my door.
Oh.
Yeah,
uh-oh.
I think you better check the... Yeah, sure.
Thank you.
I thought my cough meter would work, but it didn't.
Your what meter?
Well, there's a little cough button on the Skype, but it didn't seem like it does the trick. I have to find another means.
Oh, okay. Well, can't you just mute your mic?
Well, that's what it's supposed to be, a mic muting thing, and it doesn't seem like it worked. So,
oh, okay.
My mic must pick it up from another aspect, so I will have to just be careful and not cough.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Were they at the wrong door, Tom? They didn't have a chainsaw by chance, did they? Like that poor young woman.
No.
I don't know if you read that. A woman about a week ago. It was 6 o'clock in the morning. The cops were at her door. They had a chainsaw. They were actually sawing a hole in her front door, and she was standing there with a little puppy in her arms, scared to death. The poor little puppy wet itself naturally. I mean, what would you do if you had somebody with a chainsaw coming through your door? My God. And they were at the wrong apartment.
I know. That was not what this was. I actually know what it was. It's fine.
Well, that's
but
good.
It scared
that's
the crap good. Out of me when I saw him standing there.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah. Well, nobody just thinks it's just some benevolent thing anymore, do they, Tom? We're so in such a police state.
No.
No, you don't think they're just trying to see, do you know where this lost little dog lives?
Yeah.
You know?
So, yeah. Where were
we're
we?
Cool. I'm sorry. I apologize.
And I had just asked, it was about the press. Do you find that these Delphi groups or these meetings that are set up, do they kind of work hand in hand with the press so that when they have those meetings, and they come out and report on them, are you finding that they're being unbiased or a little biased? Because in my area, I'm finding there is a bias that takes place, and I don't know if it's because they're working together or if it just happens to be that the people that are reporting it see it that way.
Essentially, the media has no clue about any of this stuff. They don't understand it. They don't know it. I mean, there are cases where the media does know, and they are helping perpetrate it. The way this whole system works, before you ever hear about these comprehensive plans for your community or any of the other programs that they come up with, they have already worked behind the scenes and put it all together, and they will go to all the civic leaders. They will go to the newspaper editors. They'll go to the head of the college if there's one in town, the superintendent of schools. All these people will be brought in ahead of time and given a heads up before it's ever announced to the community. So they've got all their ducks in a row. They've got all the process in place. And then they announce it like, hey, it's brand new, and look what our civic leaders have brought us. And it is about as bogus as it gets. For reporters working for the newspaper, if you've got, say, for example, your reporter, he's a reporter for city council, for example. That's what his job is. Well, what he does is he makes friends with all these people. They give him news releases every week that does his job for him. He goes to the meeting. He then gets to go out and have drinks afterwards with them. He gets invited to their annual Christmas party, and they're all together. And the first thing that'll happen, if a guy like me comes to town and says, hey, you know what they're really doing over there? He's going to call one of these guys on city council that are his buddies, and he's going to ask them, hey, this guy DeWeese says this. What do you think? The guy's nuts. Okay. End of story, because for him to do his job and to look into it to see if I'm telling the truth or not means he's going to lose his contact with with those councilmen, because they'll never give him any information again.
Well, do you find that they come into town and do a lot of this? I mean, I was finding when Nestle came to our area, they were here about a year or two in advance and kind of get a good feel of the area before they even started presenting what they had in mind.
Certainly. The process that's done here, first of all, we're criticized a lot as conspiracy theorists because we're talking about Agenda 21 as a United Nations program, and you'll hear them joke and say, there aren't any blue-helmeted soldiers here in our community keeping us all under control, and they'll say the United Nations doesn't have any enforcement capability, and so this is just silliness. This is just us here on the local level that are coming up with these plans. It's all local. That's what they'll tell you over and over and over again. They do it all over the country. Here's the process that brings it from the United Nations down to your backyard. It starts in 1992 at the UN Earth Summit in Rio de Janeiro. Prior to that meeting taking place, which was a massive meeting with millions of dollars spent and world leaders from all over the world, national leaders like President George H.W. Bush, people like that were there. Prior to that meeting, hundreds of non-governmental organizations, the Nature Conservancy, the Sierra Club, the International Council for Local Environmental Initiatives, or ICLEI, all were there and all helped write programs that eventually morphed into one document called Agenda 21. Now, Agenda 21 is not a treaty that the Senate has to ratify. It's what's called a soft law policy, meaning it's a guideline. George H.W. Bush signed that document. And he, you know, in signing it, he said, yep, the United States will go along with this. This is an idea we'll start to implement. From that moment, not only does George Bush bring home that document and say, okay, guys, in the bureaucracy of the U.S. government, here's what we're going to do, all those same NGO groups which helped write it in the first place have members here. They know the agenda. They know what they want to accomplish. And they begin to work with the federal government in writing legislation and putting grant programs together that will lead to implementing Agenda 21 through the rule of law in the United States. President Bill Clinton in 1993 put together the President's Council on Sustainable Development, and if you look to see who's on that board, on that council, you will find the same people who helped write Agenda 21 in the first place at the UN level, people like from the Sierra Club, from the National Wildlife Federation, Nature Conservancy, and on and on. And so now their purpose was to put together this process as American law. So they helped write it at the international level. Now their mission is to put it in place in the U.S. They helped create legislation and grant programs that then moved down to the state level, where the state legislatures were encouraged by the same NGO groups to create legislation that would force the counties to implement comprehensive development plans, and then they went straight into the counties and into the city governments. The same NGO groups which helped write it in the first place, now they are working with your county government and your city government to, they say, we can help you write these comprehensive development plans that the state says you have to do, and we can help you find money to bring into your community to help you do it, to help you pay for it. And, of course, it all comes with a strings attached, controls of water supplies, controls of energy use, controls of building materials, controls of any kind of development that you can do in the area, all tied to this. That's the step-by-step process from the United Nations down to your local community, and that's how it's done.
And that's not just done in the U.S. It's done all over the world, right?
Absolutely. All over the world. Yeah.
You know, Tom, I was talking to somebody yesterday who when you mentioned water, it made me think of this. Someone who said that they were even putting a meter on the springs to be able to meter and charge for spring water. Isn't that something? And I was in a conversation I was in a conversation with a guy who was talking with a man who was very wealthy and owned a lot of real estate in Costa Rica, thousands and thousands of acres, and that what they're doing down there in Costa Rica is they're buying up all of the wells, offering the people a lot of money for their well, with, of course, restrictions that they'll not be able to dig another well within, several 1,000 or 2,000 meters, far enough so that it would be on to somebody else's property, be able to dig another well within a certain distance from that well they just sold them. And, of course, it was just amazing to this guy. He said the man from Costa Rica was talking about how much money they were paying them, like carbon credits, this particular man who owned a lot of acreage in Costa Rica, not to develop and not to do anything on the land. But the wells are after the water because they'll have us by the short hairs once they have the water.
Well, yeah, you control the water, you control everything, and that's one of the major emphases of this. There are all kinds of movements to stop any kind of development in third world countries. Under the sustainablest system, under the proponents of this, they believe that it's a bad thing for people in, you know, in Africa or some of these other third world countries to have what you and I have. If they are able to have cars, if they're able to have an infrastructure, they're able to have electric light in their hut, to be able to use computers and that sort of thing, but that is unsustainable. That would be horrible for the earth, and so we have to stop that. There's actually a cartel of bankers, an association of them, that have pledged that they will not lend money to build infrastructure in some third world countries, and that includes Bank of America, Wachovia, several others that they have pledged that. So they have determined that it's okay for these people to walk 5 miles a day to get their dirty water and live in their mud huts. What arrogance. What incredible arrogance of these people. But what you're just describing is happening there with water. The exact same thing is happening in the United States under the creation of conservation easements for our farmers. A farmer who thinks he's saving the family farm by getting tax credits and signing one of these conservation easements, what he's really done is he has given away the farm, that no one will ever buy the farm again because these easements are on there, and that is the goal, to have that farm turned into wilderness and not be productive land anymore. They're also getting the farmers to sell their development rights, which is exactly the same thing as you're describing with the springs, so that this will never, ever be developed. And the thing is that a farmer who signs a conservation easement has no idea now who will control that conservation easement because the green groups trade these things like a commodity. And you never know who's going to be in control of it. But suddenly a farmer will find that if he wants to farm, he won't have a choice on what crops he can farm. He won't have a choice on how much energy he can use to farm. He won't have a choice on what fertilizers and chemicals and so forth he needs to farm. That'll all be made by the controller of that conservation easement, and there's no way he can succeed that way.
And, you know, the sad part about it is, I mean, it's huge in my area. There's so many people that are really behind the wilderness area and making everything a wilderness area. They don't even realize what they're doing, I think. And there are those, I'm sure, that do realize it. But instead of sharing the land, it's all or nothing. And so they've got us pitted against each other, fighting over who gets to have the usage. And in the meantime, what they're doing is that they're splitting us down the center. And there are those that see what's going on, and there are those that don't. And these conservation easements, I think the land trusts are involved in this as well. And
absolutely.
And so you have somebody like a big water company coming into an area, and they're looking at maybe buying one piece of spring, say, and then you see them all of us, then there's a development project going on about underground water, aquifers, geothermal, and then you see them when they're in their presentation, they're showing you this big watershed area that feeds into their spring. Well, why would they be showing us that unless they were planning on controlling it? And what I see in my area is that it wasn't just a matter of just one spring. It's a matter of controlling that whole watershed all the way to the Mississippi River. And they will end up being able to do this if they implement what you're talking about, right?
Every single trickle, every little stream that feeds into a larger stream that feeds into a river that feeds, ends up going into the ocean. Every step of the way, you've got through the United Nations, the Law of the Sea Treaty, which they have not been able to ratify since Ronald Reagan was president. That's when it first came out. He refused to ratify it. And then later, after that, Senator Jesse Helms of North Carolina held it up. And to this date, they've never ratified the Law of the Sea Treaty, no matter how much pressure they put on it, because this gives the United Nations the control of the seas of the world But because, as we just described, these little streams feeding into the bigger streams, into the rivers, into the ocean, it feeds back all the way to those little streams. And every drop of water on Earth would be controlled by the United Nations and by these policies. And the United Nations looks at the world as a global commons. So all the land, all the air, space, water, everything within inside of all that, they believe they have the right to rule, regulate, and control.
And that means humans, too.
Absolutely.
And when
that is the thing. What Agenda 21 is they call it an agenda on purpose. It is an agenda to transform human society, to adhere to the rules and regulations that they're putting down, all based on the excuse of protecting the environment. How do you get the United States of America, how do you get the people in the United States who were born, recognize their natural rights, and government was designed to protect those rights that they're born with, suddenly getting us to give up those rights voluntarily? You come up with the plan for environmental Armageddon, that if we don't give up our rights, then the planet will be destroyed, and then we won't have anywhere to live. And that's the panic that they've created through global warming. And Agenda 21 is based entirely on that panic. It's the agenda to implement it all.
Well, I received an email from someone yesterday who's been following a lot of the Nature Conservancy, but it was also dealing with some of the water issues as well. And now my mind just went blank, so I may have to just stop a second and let you guys bring it back up into my head again. So I'll let you go ahead.
Yeah. Well, again, it's this agenda that people need to understand. And they are using all kinds of wonderful excuses for it all. And, as I said earlier, the American Planning Association, which is in literally every town in America, it's a well-respected organization. It's been around for a long time. This is who your elected officials look to be mainstream and so forth. They are one of the worst in enforcing this kind of policy. And what does it mean to you? What does it really boil down to the average American? Well, energy control, they are starting to come into homes and do energy audits. And a bureaucrat comes in your home with a clipboard, and he looks over your entire house, and then he'll make recommendations of what you need to do to cut back on your energy use. They will set they'll start out always saying this is voluntary, but eventually they will begin to make those voluntary goals mandatory, because after all, we in the community need to achieve these goals, and there's probably a grant tied to it that they've got to reach certain energy reduction goals in order to get that grant money or to qualify for it. So they have to do that. So what they'll do is they'll come in and they'll say, well, your home is leaking energy, you need to do new insulation, you need to put a new roof on the house, you need to put new energy-efficient windows in the house, you need to put energy-efficient appliances in the house, things you weren't planning to buy, maybe you can't afford to buy. Well, the example I give on this, the most stark I've seen, is Oakland, California. They did these things there, and it came out the average cost to the homeowners was like $35,000. And that's what this means. Sustainable development leads to sacrifice, higher prices, and shortages. That's what it leads to. And in every single case, because this is a weird mixture of socialism, fascism, and corporatism all working together. So it looks like, they're talking about a free market, free enterprise is worth because you got corporations involved, but it's not. And it may look like you have a right that you're going to these public meetings and you have a say so, but you don't. And private property cannot exist in this system. And all the land really and all the resources are become communal. The real strict definition of a sustainable community is a community where all of the goods and services that you have in that community, the food you eat, the energy you have, the building materials you use and so forth, all come from that community. They aren't imported. They don't come from somewhere else. Sustainable farming cannot feed the people. There's not enough to feed the people. And, you know, one stark way to look at this is, do you like bananas? Because if you do, you're not going to be able to get them anymore if you live in an area where they don't grow them, or oranges, or other things, because it all has to come from that little community. Yeah, this is how Davy Crockett lived, you know, 200 years ago. But,
yeah, but weren't they getting to do a lot of trading then? I mean, Tom, weren't they, at least wasn't Davy Crockett getting to exchange pelts for, you know, whatever he might have needed, a little, I don't know, gunpowder?
But
you know.
They would only have what was available in that community.
Yeah, exactly.
They were. Yeah. That's nuts.
Well,
and
you know what?
And that's the kind of craziness we're dealing with here, and they, and yet they call us, you know, nuts with tinfoil hats on. All we're doing is reporting what they write.
Well, you know, Tom, it's fascinating with this community-supported agriculture around the cities. Now, I'm outside of Philadelphia, and they have these farmer markets and that, which, of course, the taxpayers, through grants, have helped fund. Otherwise, they wouldn't be there to sell their turnips or whatever they're selling to the people. But when they talk about they're going to change one of these brown fields into making it a vegetable garden or something. Now, I don't have any idea, Tom, how many tomatoes one could get out of an acre of land in the ideal conditions or out of a lot in the city of Philadelphia growing tomatoes, but I don't think it's going to feed that many people.
And that's exactly the point, Maggie. And that's why you will also, in the same breath, as they're talking about how wonderful it is to have locally grown and organic and how great this all is, but it's not enough to feed all the people. So what do you do about that? Well, you start finding their quotes over and over again saying, we've got to reduce the population. And then you start researching that, and you find out what they mean by reduction of the population. They're talking about as much as 85% of the human population in the world has to be reduced in order to have a sustainable world. And Jacques Cousteau, one of the early environmentalists, said, we need to reduce the population by 350,000 people per day. That's insanity. And you know, how do you do that? You know, well, China's got all kind of plans. We've got forced abortion, sterilization. They arrest women there if they get pregnant with their second child. There are all kinds of horror stories of what they do with them. And is that the world we want? And for what? The fact of the matter is, we do not have an overpopulation problem. You can take all of the people in the world and put them in an area the size of Texas and have a population density of about Paris, France. Does that sound like we're overpopulated? What we have in places around the world where you've got abject poverty, you've got starvation, you've got teeming societies, you know, of overpopulation, the reason for that is because you've got bad government. That government is not taking care of their people. They're not letting people, you know, have the freedoms that we have to move forward and own private property and build wealth and better themselves. All that's illegal. And that's the reason they have poverty and starvation and everything that goes with it, and why the United States was so wealthy, because we could have private property. But now, under sustainable development, we are losing our rights to private property. And what are we seeing? We are seeing wealth disappear. We are seeing hopelessness set in. We are seeing shortages, higher prices, everything that plagues these other countries that haven't allowed that. And why? Because sustainable development does not allow private property. We're destroying it in this country. We're destroying the middle class, and we're destroying our industrial base.
And the real interesting part about it is, you know, what you're talking about, I mean, you can really look at it. If they've shipped out all our ability to manufacture, then they've shipped out our ability to create and sustain, love me that term, the wealth that we have had to other countries. And what they do is they're moving that wealth around. And I just wonder how many of those countries that are now being industrialized and built up just like our country had in the past, whether they're going to be able to continue their growth, or they're going to be put in the same situation as us when the powers that be decide they don't want them to sustain and become a third world country like they are trying to do to us now.
Sure, they will eventually run into the same juggernaut because the controls will be there. And again, as they're doing that, I mean, sustainable development is really about one thing. It's about redistribution of wealth. And that's what we're seeing with rules and regulations that shut down American industry, creates the Rust Belt through, Ohio and these other states that are affected by that. Our factories are rusting away, and they are moving them to these third world countries. And there are fortunes being made there as they do that. But eventually, that also will run into this juggernaut. But here is I said this has nothing to do with protecting the environment. That's just the excuse. This is a prime example right here, what we're talking about. The regulations, for example, the Kyoto Treaty that came out of the United Nations about 10 or so years ago, this is the first global warming treaty. And, the whole purpose of this was to put all kinds of limits on energy use and emissions and so forth from American and other industrial nations and their factories. The result of that was factories couldn't operate here, and it had to move, down to other places. Well, interestingly enough, where the growth was taking place, China, India, Brazil, a couple of other countries, they were made exempt to the Kyoto Treaty, so they could have all the belching factories they wanted to, but America couldn't. Now, I ask you this question. Is pollution pollution or pollution not pollution?
Yeah,
if an American factory does it or if a Brazilian factory does it, isn't it the same pollution?
Right.
So how is it that they're allowed to do it but we're not, and that doesn't hurt the environment somehow?
Well, Tom, I'm going to have a guy on my show next week who has a self-contained septic system so that nothing would ever get into the environment at all. It would be entirely contained. Yet they still don't want them to be able to use that, which is totally proof that it has absolutely nothing to do with the environment at all. It's just a hustle.
And there has never been a study done that shows that septic tanks, other than a faulty one, and that's an aberration, but a septic tank system does not damage the environment. And yet, in Maryland, and I'm sure, Meg, you're well aware of this, the governor there is moving to ban septic tanks in rural areas, supposedly to protect the Chesapeake Bay, that watershed we were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
The fact of the matter is, there's only one reason they want to do that. They want to make it impossible for people to live in the rural areas, and banning septic tanks is a great way to do it.
Well, one of the things that we need to be making everybody aware of, it's like we're being shotgunned with all these different issues, but this is part of their agenda. And when we're fighting one issue, we need to be paying attention to 10 others because they're all interrelated. And one thing what I was trying to bring up earlier was the fact that they want to, there's some area around this here that they want to start making the prairie dog an endangered species. Well, the prairie dog covers a sizable amount of area that fits into their map. Well, when you start having one overlay over another overlay, you start finding that there's not a lot of land available that is useful for what they have been doing in the past, because there's something going on with each little agenda that's going on. And this prairie dog thing, I don't know about you, but I haven't seen a problem with them being endangered, but all they have to do is say it's endangered, and you have to take on this battle. And they
go ahead. Yeah. As soon as they say those words, then the process is put in action. And again, this is where it comes down to the excuse. For example, there's needed expansion to the Los Angeles International Airport. They need new runways there. They need to do some things to make it safer. And it's being held up because there are once in a while some mud puddles out there out on the land that they want to expand the runway. And there is some kind of insect out there that lives in that. And we can't disturb their habitat. And so they will come up with the excuses. And the when they want to block something from development, they'll make up something like that, and then they'll put $1 million into a kitty to create a new organization to save the sucker fish, save the some kind of fly, and then you know then they block the development. Now they're so concerned about endangered species, and yet. And you know, if you have, for example, a bat in your home, gets in your home, if you kill it, you're in trouble. That's almost universal across the country, that you cannot kill a bat. Yet, it doesn't seem to bother them at all that they have built forests of windmills that the Audubon Society calls Cuisinarts in the air that are killing birds by the millions. And bats, the air pressure that comes out of that, it actually explodes their heart. But we're not concerned about that because that's protecting the environment. Excuse me? If it, either it's an endangered species or it's not, either it matters or it doesn't, but it isn't going to just be convenient for one group and not for the other to be, you know, used as control. But this is the kind of thing we're facing, and this is why there is so much anger now that is rising up around the country. And people are saying this stuff is nuts. There's no truth to it. It's a lie. It's a hoax. And you know, we want to put a stop to it. And that's what we're starting to hear across the country.
And the fact of the matter is there's a lot of species that are dying off naturally and have been since this planet was existed. And then we'll continue to do so whether we have a hand in it or not.
You know, what are your thoughts on the rising police state going on here in this nation? Tom, I was looking at something while you were talking, and these little dragonfly-type camera, little mini helicopters that look like dragonflies that they're now using for surveillance. And, of course, I remember when I first read about one about a year ago, they claimed that they were going to use it in the bad neighborhoods of Miami, which, of course, everybody buys into the concept of, oh, well, if it's in a bad neighborhood where the bad guys are, then it's okay. And I was reading something today about them flying around the neighborhoods in Chicago, these little drones, for a lack of a better word. What do you think about this police state that we're living in that's inching closer and closer and closer to our doorsteps, Tom?
Absolutely. It goes hand in hand with all this. Control is control is control. And you will begin to hear, now, of course, they've just approved test programs for these drones we have flying over war zones, little airplanes, basically, with nobody in them, but can do surveillance. And one of the big problems that we have been facing around the country on the enforcement of sustainable development are government agents that are coming on people's private property and doing all kinds of inspections and looking to see what you're doing on your property and so forth. Well, see, now that becomes kind of dangerous if people start to rise up to send the agent out there. So it'll be much easier to send an unmanned aircraft over that you can't really see and have it do all the surveillance, and then they'll know everything that's going on there. So you're going to begin to hear that that's now going to become an environmental protection tool to you know, just assure that we're all taking care of our property properly.
And you got animal you have animal control that comes under the Department of Agriculture, if I'm not mistaken. You've got an internationalizing of the training of our police. So when you do that, that again goes hand in hand. You're seeing that many of these programs are done on an international basis. It's just creeped into this country. I mean, I really have to wonder if this country even really exists at this point. other than the fact that they haven't said it doesn't, even though everything is regionalized and internationalized, our building codes, everything is being put in these terminology that you see going on in the rest of the world, and yet they haven't told us yet, well, you know, your control is via, you know, the UN or some other kind of treaty, right?
Or do you? Absolutely. I mean, we are seeing more and more of it. They've not yet won. We still do have the United States. We still do have, and we're winning victories when we cite the rule of law in many cases, although it's getting fewer at a time. But what we're seeing now, you know, like this whole issue with the detention camps and so forth that came up. I was just reading today that what state was Tennessee, I believe, is passing legislation or has legislation introduced that is now saying the federal government doesn't have a right to enforce anything like this, and we will not recognize it in this state. We're seeing that kind of thing rise up in states all over the country. People are working to fight back, and you know, the more victories that they have, the more blatant they get. And the more aggressive they get, the easier it is for the average person to see, and that's why we're seeing more and more people rise up. We have come a long way, and we are in grave, grave danger. But I believe that in the last year, we established a beachhead, where we are now operating from, and we're beginning to win victories. And as we said at the very beginning, these guys are panicked over that because their entire agenda is built on a house of lies, a house of cards, and it just takes one little thing to blow something over and it starts to fall like crazy. And we saw this happen with the global warming issue that just a year and a half or so ago, where they had the climate gate issue, where emails came out showing that these guys were lying all along. And as soon as that came out, people started saying, yeah, I knew that global warming thing was a hoax, and the thing just dropped like a rock. And they're now looking for new ways to enforce these policies instead of global warming. But sustainable development is completely based on that lie. And, you begin to kick over a couple of its pillars, and it will start to collapse as well.
Well, you know, one of the things that I was starting to state earlier is that we need to, when we're looking at this, it's like they've got plan A, B, C, D, E, F, G, and we need to be going that deep when we take on these issues because, like you said, we might win a little bit here, but through incrementalism, and this is how they operate, they still, they may take, you know, three or four steps forward and they'll take a step or two backwards, but then they've still acquired a part of their agenda. So we have to be thinking in those terms ourselves so that we can back them down. And that's, and we don't have to feel alone in this because people around the world are waking up to the same thing going on with them.
It's very true. Well, first of all, we've been trying to help people understand that Agenda 21 literally is involved in almost every issue that we're fighting. And, you know, whether it's taxes or Obamacare or the Fed or, you know, the property rights issues and all those kind of things, education, the restructuring of education, all that has direct ties to Agenda 21 and how it's being implemented and the tools that are being used to implement it, and gun control and others. You need to understand that it's Agenda 21 you have to fight, not these individual issues, because they're using a divide-and-conquer tactic to try to get us to separate. Well, I'm busy on this issue. Well, I'm busy on that issue. And you're completely missing the central threat that is there from it. Once you understand that Agenda 21 is at the bottom of all this, and that's what you're fighting, it becomes much easier to go after it. And, this is people around the country, around the world are starting to realize this as well. I get a report from England every day on, especially focusing on the climate change issues and stuff, and England particularly, but other European nations are beginning to throw this stuff off like crazy. They came a lot farther than we did, and they've got a lot more to throw off. But see, it got so far that they were able to really, really see how bad it was, And now they are really throwing this stuff off because it's just destroying their way of life.
You know, Tom, I had read something. It's funny you mentioned the UK. I read something just a week or so ago, and it was talking about, it was an article saying that there's a lot of older retired people in the UK, and they might have a three-bedroom house, and they are only using one bedroom, and it's just not really that fair anymore. There's a lot of families who could use that house that this old retired World War II vet might be living in, and so they're thinking about other ways that they could just move these people out, and they could make better use of that space. Now, I can't remember the exact words that they chose, you know, some wonderfully Orwellian-sounding social justice adjectives that they use, but you can see where that's going to happen in this country as well. I had, a few months ago, I got my water meter was replaced, just out of the blue, too. But before they replaced it, I was on the phone with the water company. They wanted to know how many people lived in my house. And the first time the guy asked me the question, I didn't answer. I just said, what's it to you? It doesn't matter. That's irrelevant. And then we were talking for a few minutes, and then the second time he asked me again, it caught me off guard, and I answered. And then 2 days later, they were here to change the water meter. Now, there was nothing wrong with the water meter. It wasn't like it wasn't accurately measuring how much water I was using, but they put on a brand new digital state-of-the-art water meter.
Yeah. What you're mentioning about houses with space available in them and what to do about that. I mean, this is a classic thing that happened in Russia when the Soviets took over, and they, you know, people who lived in mansions, suddenly they became apartment buildings. And the people who owned the house were directed to stay in, you know, one or two rooms at the, you know, in the West Wing. And then they had all these people they didn't know move into their home and live in it. And that's what happened. And, you know, this, as I said, this is a wacko collaboration of, or combination of socialism, fascism, and corporatism that incorporates every part of our life. And the social justice issue that you brought up, I will say now, if you don't understand the social justice aspect of Agenda 21, you don't understand Agenda 21, period. That is a major part of this, where and social justice is a phrase that was coined by Karl Marx, and, you know, that's, you know, a major tenet of communism, and it's every welfare program ever created. And the idea behind social justice is none of us can move forward unless we all move forward together. And private property is a social injustice because some can build wealth from it and others can't. And, you know, that whole socialist claptrap that comes out, this utopian idea that doesn't exist. And so...
Hey, Tom, talk about, if you could, some aspects of how HUD operates to advance this social justice with the low-income housing they want to put in high-rent districts in there. Talk about that, if you would, please.
Yeah, this is one of the tenets of it, you know, that we are mixed-use neighborhoods. You have a nice neighborhood, and they want to bring in public housing to, you know, bring other people in there. Now, I actually met with the governor of Virginia's development director, and we were sitting around the table with him, and he actually said to us, you know, he was highly behind this idea. He said, golly, if you could bring some of the poorer people into those richer neighborhoods, suddenly you will see them taking better care of their lawns, and they'll be up, they'll see these other people going to work in the morning, and so they'll want to do that too, so that'll get them incentive to get a job and get out there, and just everything will just be so much better by bringing these poor people into the nicer neighborhoods. And I, at the time, I happened to be with County Commissioner Richard Rothschild from Carroll County, Maryland, and who knows full well what this is all about. And he bit his tongue at the moment, but he said to me afterwards, he says, I know exactly what happened in those neighborhoods. They're not going to see those people going to work in the morning because they're going to still be in bed because they don't have to go to work. they're not going to take care of their lawns and so forth. They're going to take all the rooms in their house, and they're going to start renting them out for prostitution, for drug deals, things like that. That's what they do. And pretty soon that nice neighborhood is going to go down the tubes, and good people are going to start moving out of there. And that's the reality of it.
Sure it is, Tom, because nobody ever has respect for or cares for something they didn't have to earn. It's just a reality of life.
Well, you know, one of the things that has been incrementally spread across this country is your homeowner associations and your condo associations. And this was a form of what you're talking about, as far as my understanding goes, of what they were doing over in these places like Russia and whatever, where somebody else is telling you how you can live. And the common thing that I hear so often is, oh, it's going to affect the value of my place, so you got to get your place up to looking just like this. And when in reality, when I watched things selling at their high peak, it didn't matter what it looked like. It was still, if the house across the street had the same square footage and looked the same, it didn't matter all that much as to whether it was in perfect shape or not. It still mattered is what it did sell at. And go ahead.
The excuse that you will hear them use on all this is that, if somebody does something next door to you or down the street that affects your property value, so we've got to have all the development plan and homeowners associations and all that to protect the property owner. That's what they'll tell you. But the fact of the matter is, since the beginning of time, in this country anyway, we have had nuisance laws. If somebody really was damaging your property in some way, then you had a right to take them to court and do something about it. But this arbitrary dictatorship at the top that tells you what color door you can have, what color you can paint your house, how high your grass can be, all that, the fact of the matter is, all those things came out of the Habitat conferences of the United Nations dictating how our houses would be. And homeowners associations were the first strike of Agenda 21 coming into our communities. And these are nothing but Nazi-controlled dictatorships that, somebody gets power and they can arbitrarily make decisions about what you do, whether you can have an American flag flying from your home, that sort of thing. And once you sign into a homeowners association, just like the farmers with the conservation easements, you have just signed away your rights to your property.
Right, but even when it comes down to it, private property has always been questionable when you sign documents that state that your tenants in common and your tenants here. I mean, we've been under an illusion for many years, but now we're getting down to the nitty-gritty of it. These people don't have enough control. There is no such thing as too much control when you're into control.
That's absolutely right. They are moving to get more and more and more, and they always say, well, we just need a little bit here, just need a little bit there. But, we talk about various laws. We will go after a proposed law and tell people we've got to stop this law. And they'll say, but it doesn't say that. It doesn't do that. Where do you get the idea that this law will do this or do that? Well, the point is that we've watched enough of these things being put into place, that they deliberately write the laws so that they don't say anything. It will say in consultation with the Department of Transportation or in consultation with this department or that department. Well, take a look at what the policies are of those departments, and you will begin to see what they have planned. And so this bill that doesn't really say that, in the end, that's exactly where it's going to go. And the prime example of this, back in 1996, most Americans weren't aware that there were three separate bills passed in Congress to create a national ID card. It was the Illegal Immigration Act. It was the there was a Health Care Act. And there was a Deadbeat Dads law that were all passed. And all three of those laws had the same exact language in them. There's a certain section that was in each one of them. And we began to discover this a few years later, just before it was ready to go into place. And we began to to attack these bills, saying that this was the creation of a national ID. And the government came out and said, no, it doesn't. It absolutely does not do that. But what it said was, in consultation with the Department of Transportation and the National Association of the Department of Motor Vehicles, this is, you know, what this will do. Well, we began to look at the National Association of Department of Vehicles. They had a place on their website that told exactly how driver's licenses would be created, exactly what information would be on there, and it corresponded perfectly with the section in these bills. And, you know, even though they called me a liar, we were able to prove that they were creating a national ID, and we were able to get Senator Richard Shelby from Alabama to get these things repealed before they ever went into place. But that's how they do it. They say it in a way that doesn't sound like anything, and Agenda 21 is written that way, language that just doesn't sound threatening.
Well, I was looking up some voting regulations in our state, and I, you know, various times over the years, I'd gone to the Colorado Revised Statutes, and what had really surprised me when I went to open up the volume there, it just kept saying the laws are being harmonized. The laws are being harmonized, but it didn't say what they were being harmonized to. But by the term harmonization, I've been around it enough to know that maybe it's being harmonized with some kind of a international type tie-in, but again, I still have to go back to follow up and find out where they finished this and followed this through to, but it was one law after another.
Yeah, well, that term harmonized, you see that used over and over and over again. What does it mean? It means that we're going to mesh all these things together to a one-size-fits-all situation. And, you know, the uniqueness of the United States and every single state being different, and even every community being different, is that one size does not fit all. Only in socialism does one size fit all. And
it's not a good fit, Tom.
No, absolutely not. There's nothing good about it.
No.
Okay, let me go ahead and say this is KHENLP 106.9 Salida, and my guests this evening are Maggie Rodden, who has a program called The Unsolicited Opinion on Republic Broadcasting Network, and Tom DeWeese, who is president of the American, Policy Center. My mind is not holding up real well. Okay.
That's all. I'll forget that.
But anyways, you've also you're traveling around the country trying to educate people as to what's happening with Agenda 21. And now, are you involved much, Tom, with the Freedom Advocates?
The Freedom Advocates?
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you said?
Yes.
I know them very well. I've worked with them quite a bit in the past. Michael Shaw is an old friend of mine. They're up until the last couple of years, there were really only about five of us in the country talking about Agenda 21. It started with Henry Lamb from whose organization is called Freedom 21, and we began to put on national conferences called Freedom 21 to counter this. But Henry is the one who went to the international meetings and dug this stuff up and educated us. And then myself and Michael Shaw and Michael Kaufman from Sovereignty International, and a gentleman named Michael Chapman, who ties all sustainable development agenda to the education curriculum. We were about the only five talking about this around the country for about 15 years or so. And you can imagine how far we were getting with that. But as it began to, you know, we were working with ranchers, farmers, timber people who were on the front lines at that time of the assault of this, because they were out in the rural areas, and that's where they started. But it wasn't until it began to move into the cities that people started to listen and feel the effects of it and understand. And only in about the last year and a half has it really exploded. We now have hundreds of people who have educated themselves on this and are talking about it. And there are hundreds of meetings taking place around the country. People are learning about it.
And, you know, you did mention a little bit earlier about, you know, having people segmented and divided. But one thing about Agenda 21, it is, I mean, they are trying to control every aspect of our lives. And I feel my true feeling is that if you become involved and realize that it's many layers deep, but if you do pick up some aspect of it and start fighting it, there's so many other people that can pick up various aspects of it and make it tougher for the opposition to deal with it than trying to organize and become one big group. It's so much easier to subvert a large group than it is to have many of us out there taking on these issues, and that's why they've been doing it to us. Right?
Yeah. And what I was watching when the Tea Party began, people are out in the streets and they were protesting the Fed, and they were protesting taxes and Obamacare and all that, and not one of them was mentioning Agenda 21 or sustainable development. I wrote an article at that time, and I said the Tea Party cannot restore the Republic without this information. And one of the things I pointed out was when they put Agenda 21 policies in place in your community, sustainable development, one of the things they put together are the whole thing is run through non-elected boards, councils, regional governments. You have planning boards, you have water boards, you have energy boards, historic preservation boards, all these things. These people are non-elected. They are not responsive to you. And, the definition of a Soviet is, that very thing, non-elected, unresponsive to the people boards that report to apex councils that, pass down the rules from on high. And I said, you cannot restore the Republic in this country if your own community is a little Soviet. And that began to resonate and, ran through the Tea Party like crazy. And that's kind of helped us bring, this to where we are now. And
so a Soviet's a council, right? A Soviet is a council. That's my understanding.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
And what is a council? And it's these non-elected, self-appointed potentates that make the rules. They aren't asking you. You're not voting on it. You don't have any say in it. They're telling you what they're going to do. And, one council leads to another council. Regional governments. You got a situation down in Tennessee right now where a regional government applied for a grant from the federal government and they didn't ask the people. They didn't vote on it. They just did it. And none of these people, the citizens are unaware of it. But what they have done is they've locked in 16 counties, all the governments that are inside those 16 counties, local governments, are tied to this. They have to pledge to go along with it all because the money is coming in. And so here are, there are five or six people on the original council that did this. That made the decision for all these counties, and that's the way it operates. And then they're just told, "No, you've got to go along with it."
Well, what I've observed, and tell me if I'm correct in this assumption, but I've observed, say, like they wanted to put a jail in my area, and they had to go through this process of voting on the issue. And once they got that jail put in the area, it's though they created this. Or it isn't just jails, but there's other districts, library districts or school districts or whatever. Once they get these special districts in there, can they kind of like circumvent the voting process and then they can kind of start creating and multiplying themselves without public input?
Yes, absolutely they can. Once it starts, one appoints the other. And see, the other thing driving all this is, government has been reinvented. You may have heard about that through the Clinton administration, big deal about government being reinvented. Well, reinvented government with sustainable development. And what they began to create were, a lot of these regional governments that, oversee whole areas. You were talking about earlier about harmonizing. Well, this is how they do it. We need to have, these three communities are all in the same area. For example, here in Washington, we've got three areas that come together. You've got Maryland, Virginia, and Washington, D.C. that all come together, and it's all one big metropolitan area. But it's three different political entities. And so we have to harmonize what goes on there. So we create a regional government council that oversees everything that happens there. What do? They hand down from on high dictates to the elected government, the city councils there, and you'll hear them say, oh, this came from the regional government. We have to do this. You know, one of the big things they're doing here now, the regional government, is the creation of building the, you know, expanding the metro system here. They're expanding it in a way that is absolutely crazy in the way they're doing it. They're spending money that they, you know, massive amounts of money, taking private property and so forth. This all come from this regional planning group that is unelected and doesn't really answer to anybody.
You know, Tom, I came across this website. You may have been on it before, America2050.org. Have you looked, had a chance to look at any of the stuff up on that website, Tom, yet?
I haven't seen that, no.
Well, they've got all these different kind of maps on there, Tom, and it's pretty fascinating. It talks about the different mega regions that they plan, and there's maps for the underutilized counties and underperforming regions, underperforming counties. And, of course, you just know when you think about Dr. Kaufman's map, laid over these maps here where they defined areas as underperforming, you just know where it's all headed. But it's fascinating because they have the different railroad or high-speed rail routes that they want passengers to travel. And it's really, really amazing, the information that is right out there for all of us to see.
When I was in Atlanta speaking a couple of weeks ago, there was another gentleman making a presentation. One of the things they want to do in Atlanta is bring a new bus system in there. And he studied it, and he looked at what their predictions were for ridership, who the riders would be, what kind of how much ridership they would have, and how much they would spend on it, you know, what it would take to build this thing. And he came to a startling conclusion.
Are they going to be riding around in circle stuff?
No, what he figured out was that with the amount of money they were spending, they could buy every single potential rider a Rolls Royce and have enough money
right.
left over afterwards to buy him also a chauffeur.
Well, you know, that's not uncommon with just about any of these large infrastructure projects. And if I was happened to be in a gathering recently, and I happened to meet a gentleman who was an engineer around a lot of these military projects. And when I got to looking at it, most of the projects and the work that is going on is either through military or through municipal infrastructure projects. And that's how they're kind of sliding, because instead of crashing into the wall abruptly, where it's happening at a much slower pace because these large infrastructure projects are what's keeping these municipalities and us going. What do you think? I think he said there was over 3,000 military projects going on right now in this country.
Well, how many bases do we have around the world, Tom? Is it like 170 military bases we have all around the world? I mean, look at the amount of money.
That.
Yeah, it's incredible the amount of money that is spent outside of this country. And then you read the articles about people living in tunnels. I read an article about 1,000 people living in tunnels under Las Vegas. People eating rats. The homeless shelters turning people away and telling them to go live in the woods. I was reading an article and saw a little video, a newscaster had actually reported on it, which was surprising, of a small little forested area in North Jersey where there are about 50 people who are living in the woods and, the one lady used to be a graphic designer, and I can't remember what her husband had done for a living. But, I mean, these weren't, you know, reprobates who were just scraping themselves off the sidewalk and someone who had suffered from, you know, drug addiction or mental illness. These were people who lost their jobs, and then it was just the snowball effect from there, and now they were living in a tent in the woods in North Jersey.
Well, you know,
That's what happened under socialism You know, the whole issue with all the foreclosures, for example, on all these homes, you know, this all comes down to that same thing. It started with the whole social justice structure of banks were required to make loans based on federal law to people who could not afford them. That's part of social justice. And what, you know, so good, sound economics is thrown out the door because somebody's got to do something for the poor. And
yeah.
So what do? You make more poor people. That's what you end up doing. You aren't
yeah.
helping those people. Redistribution of wealth, you know, that doesn't mean that we all move forward together richer. It means we all move forward together poorer. And, you know, they take from you today to give to this person, and tomorrow that person needs some more, so they take some more from you, and they take some more from you. Pretty soon you're the one receiving because you can't afford it anymore. Or maybe there's so many taxes that your business goes under, or so many regulations, and so there's nothing left there.
Right.
And what you've done is you've assigned these people, you're not helping them, you've assigned them to lifelong breadlines. And what needs to be done is a process to help them come out of being poor by building wealth of their own, which is private property ownership.
Okay, and one other aspect is you're seeing a huge growth in government bureaucracies. I've just watched how some of these drug and alcohol body fluid analysis centers are just expanding like crazy because there's so many people that are being caught up into the system that for the prison system, and I'm going out there trying to shop for a computer, looking around on the internet, and there's actually organizations now that are marketing you buying prison labor goods. So now our people are competing with themselves, which is undermining our ability to make a good living with prison prisoners. And so where we were complaining about the Chinese, you know, having prison, not prison, but, well, slave labor, now that is our equivalent of the same thing.
Nothing good comes out of government control ever. Ever. And the government is incapable of doing anything right, because once it starts to do something, once we give it a power to do something, all it knows how to do is get more power and more money. And, you know, Washington's hiring now. You know, it's been on a hiring spree ever since the so-called depression that we went through, where the rest of the country's gone under. Washington's hiring, and there's a big reason for that.
Well, you know, when you talk about the social justice aspect of this, Tom, a few years, maybe 3 or 4 years ago, I couldn't sleep one night, so I had on the TV, it was about 3 a.m., and I was on HBO, and I came across this documentary called The Yes Men Fix the World. And so I started watching it, and it was this couple of the guys who pulled hoaxes, big hoaxes around the country, and one of them they had pulled was actually they went to India. And you remember that Bhopal, India chemical disaster, Dow Chemical, I think. Remember that? I don't know, about 20 years ago.
Right.
Well, they went there and they told the people in the town, they pretended they were representatives of Dow, and they've decided they were going to give $1 billion to the people in that area that were harmed by that chemical disaster. And of course, the price of the stock of Dow just plummeted. And then they came clean and said, oh, well, it's a big hoax. We're not really from Dow at all. Well, another hoax that they pulled, and this was after Hurricane Katrina, they went down there, and they went to a lot of the people in the poor communities that were devastated. And, of course, there were a lot of low-income housing. There was a lot of low-income housing that wasn't damaged that the people could have moved back into, but they were being prevented from moving back into these homes. And so these two guys went to them and said, listen, we're from, I don't know where they said, the Department of Housing or HUD or something, and we are going to allow you to move back into your homes, which of course is what the people wanted to do. And so they put on a big hoax there, and as it turned out, of course, that wasn't the case. They planned on raising all of these perfectly good homes that were not damaged by Katrina, because through this social engineering, of course, they want to have, and through an interview with one of the builders, what they planned on having was this multi-use dwellings, these different dwellings where they'd have some low-income housing, subsidized housing, along with the very expensive housing, and they'd all just mix everybody up like you mentioned before, and it would all be just one big happy family, Tom. And the guy that they interviewed, one of the developers, he was talking about how, yeah, they think that maybe if they see somebody going off to work every morning, that's going to inspire them to get up off their duff and go to work as well. It just was nonsense, and I thought, here it is, right in black and white. They're filming this, and they're admitting to the fact of what a fraud this is.
It is absolutely astounding that this lie, a socialist lie, that this utopia can actually exist, but what they're doing is places like Katrina, where they have that kind of a disaster, they are using that as an excuse to enforce sustainable development policies in the rebuilding part of it. But look what a mess New Orleans continues to be. You've still got neighborhoods destroyed. FEMA was supposed to come in there and do all this wonderful stuff, and they haven't done it. They've destroyed whole areas of the community, and government cannot do this stuff. Get out of the way and let free enterprise rebuild it and let people make profits from doing that. That will help the economy, and people will move forward. But the way they're doing it now, all they do is oppress everybody in the country by stealing this money from us and throwing it away on ridiculous projects that never come about, and the rebuilding doesn't take place.
Well, you know, in this documentary, they actually came across one of the Rathkes. I don't know if it was Wade Rathke or his brother, but he happened to say how they wanted to take advantage of a crisis. You know, you can't let these good crises go to waste. And I thought how ironic that was.
Well, one of the things, though, that you still need to be aware of is that there's always been those that go in and take advantage of those kind of situations, and that goes way, way, way back. So it isn't like free enterprise is the answer to anything, because there are those that will go in there and try to take advantage of those situations. I don't know the answer to it, but I do know that it's gotten to the point that disaster capitalism has become a tool to take property and expand this Agenda 21.
Yeah.
Well, people are exploiting. Yeah, no, that's not free enterprise. Well, that's
taking
advantage of situations created by other human beings. But we're talking about allowing the free market, if there was such a thing, allowing those forces to work where, may the best man win kind of thing, and the lowest bidder, and, the best outcome, and, you make a better mousetrap, you're going to get to build the mousetraps, and that kind of thing.
What we're seeing now happens because of Agenda 21-type regulations and controls. For example, I've been on, many interviews where people call in and have their, tell me their stories. And one in particular, I was on a program down in Baton Rouge, as a matter of fact, and she wanted to build on her home. She wanted to add an addition to her home. The town has one guy who is the decider of all this. He's the one who comes out, and he's part of the planning board, and he comes out and decides whether she can have a permit for it. I mean, she tells him, you can do that. And so she tears down her porch and stuff she wanted to take down, and now she needs to get a permit to, do the other work she wanted to do, and he denies it. Why? Oh, well, you're too close to the front of your property. You can't do that. He didn't mention that when she told him what she wanted to do. This is the kind of tyranny of a government official who there's no control over. He has all the control, and there's nothing you can do. And you go to the city councilman, which she did. What did they do? Referred to him. And when so she started to write some letters to the editor and do some things to try to fight back. All she did was make him mad. And so he was punishing her in several different ways, and she still couldn't build onto her house. This is not freedom. This is not the way that America is supposed to work. Nobody should have that kind of control. Your elected officials should fire this guy, but they don't.
No, they don't.
So this is what we run into.
Well, you know, Tom, I had a fellow I was talking to about a week ago. He was down in Virginia, actually. You're down in Virginia. He was in Virginia, and I don't remember what county he was in, but he had two homes. He had a rental home that he had paid about $450,000 for, and it had a garage that had been turned into a little apartment for an au pair. And they told him that, and it was like that when he bought it. And, of course, the appraisal and the deed, the title was clear and everything, and no one told him that this wasn't up to code and standard. Well, he had owned the house about 6 years when they came along and told him that he needed to tear down that apartment that was built in the garage, that it wasn't up to standard. And so, of course, he did all the different things and was jumping through all the hoops and that, and now he's ending up with that house being foreclosed on because the value of the house exceeds what he or is lower than what he'd be able to rent it out for now since it doesn't have this extra space that he tore out. And they want to fine him, I think, $100 a day, and just all this outrageous stuff, and it was just so sad to hear. He was a young kid too.
You asked the question for what, why, who was hurt? You know, if he had the property like it was, so what? Where does this government get the power, the right to have that kind of power to decide every little decision like that, right down to how high your grass is on your property? Or what color you paint your door, or in this case, this is the kind of thing Americans have got to start asking. By what right? Who is hurt here? Who's the victim here? What, you know, what is gained by all this regulation? And because, you know, you are put in an absolute straitjacket to do anything on your property. There was a day when your property was yours, and everybody could just get off of it because it was yours, including government agents. And, you know, to say that today sounds so incredibly radical, but that's the way it used to be when we had private property here. Now we have, and in fact, there is a piece of legislation in New Hampshire that I'm very excited about that is going through the New Hampshire legislature. In fact, it has passed the House there by a veto-proof margin. So now it's on the way to the Senate, which is a little tougher job. But this bill, if passed, would make it mandatory that any federal, state, or local official could not come on your private property without your written permission. That is
astounding
legislation today, but that's what needs to be done.
And this is New Hampshire, Tom?
Yes.
Oh, the live free, huh? Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Maybe that's the state we need to move to.
I put that out to several people that I know, including a state legislator in Washington State, Matt Shea, and he wrote back to me and said, we're already working on it here. So that is a revolution. If we can begin to establish that kind of legislation to stop this, because we've got to ask this question, by what right? Who do you think you are that you can come here on my private property and tell me I have to have a permit to move a light socket? I've got to have a permit to, you know, practically polish my floors. You know, this is my property, and we've got to reestablish that, or we have no property. And as a friend of mine, a great patriot who's now deceased, rancher Wayne Hage, he said, if you do not have the right to own property, you are property. And
right.
Yeah.
That is absolutely the situation.
Well, you know, right now the overriding agenda here is the Agenda 21, but it doesn't mean that if we're even able to back down Agenda 21, there isn't something else that will be reinvented to take its place. And this is again
count
where
people,
yeah, and and so this is where people just need to be paying attention to what's going on around them and to be able to see through the rhetoric and the manipulations, because backing one issue down doesn't necessarily mean that they don't have three or four behind it to come back in and make sure they still get their way. Often I've found that to be the case.
Well, they change the word. You know, it's the same policy. It's always the same. But they change the name. They change the word. And they say, oh, no, this isn't that. You know, I don't know what. Those people are crazy. They're conspiracy theorists. We're just doing this. know?
Yeah. Well, you've been at it so long, Tom. You're a sleuth when it comes to being able to see what it is they're up to. You could see it with a blindfold on.
I know when their lips are moving, they're lying.
Yeah, there you go, right? That's for sure.
Yeah.
Well, and that's one of the things that I found kind of key here is that we keep, for some reason, we keep letting these people tell us, they get a new crop of them, and we think that they're going to change their methods. And it hasn't changed. We're being tag-teamed, and it's time we start realizing that the political system and the processes in front of us is working for them, but it isn't working for us.
I think we're getting there. I think people are beginning to really rise up against this. And let me tell you, some of the things that are happening across the country, because we you know, when we talk about this stuff, it can sound so oppressive that you just simply give up because you think there's no way around this. But we have managed, one of the organizations, the UN organizations that is operating in countries all over, or in communities all over the country and around the world, is the International Council for Local Environmental Initiatives, or ICLEI. And this organization helped write Agenda 21, and they made it their mission to then go into the communities and make it happen. And they're the ones that are guiding the county commissioners and so forth. They're the ones that are bringing all kinds of materials in to train your city government, your employees and so forth, to only look at sustainable development practices. And so we targeted ICLEI as the villain in all this. I think we did the job a little too well, because now people think if you get rid of ICLEI, then you've gotten rid of Agenda 21. It's not true, but you have fired a first shot. But we have succeeded in the last 12 months in getting what we believe 54 communities to pull out of ICLEI. And ICLEI had set a goal to have 1,000 communities as members by 2015. They got up to 600. They only got 17 communities to become members in that same period of time as we got 54 out. That's a net reduction of over 30 communities to get them out. But along the way, we have state legislation that's being put in place. I mentioned what's going on in New Hampshire. New Hampshire also has a bill to make it illegal for a community or a state agency in New Hampshire to pay dues or put money in any way into ICLEI's pocket. So, and that's also going through the legislature, a little more controversial. But in the state of Wisconsin, they have passed in the House and headed for the Senate a bill that would repeal the legislation that enforces the communities to put comprehensive development plans together, and they're repealing the grant money that was being used to help pay for it. And that exact same kind of legislation has actually passed, and the governor has signed it in Florida. And so that means that the communities are no longer under mandatory rule that they've got to do comprehensive development plans. They can do it if they want to, but they're not mandatory. Those are huge victories that we have scored in the last year, and much, much more on the way. So, this is what we're seeing happen.
Talk a little bit, if you would, about how these like metropolitan planning organizations are getting their hands, if you will, or their around the local the county. Say, for example, in Philadelphia, it's a 9-county regional planning organization, and a lot of them are using redevelopment and that. Explain how that operates, if you would, please.
As I mentioned earlier, you've got these non-governmental organizations. There are literally thousands of them that are operating all over the world. And they help write this stuff. They know exactly what it is. And then they team up with groups like the American Planning Association and the Renaissance Planning Group and other planning groups that are operating in this country that maybe even have a long history in this country. So you say, well, they've been around a long time. That's legitimate. We've had development plans for a long time. That's legitimate. All that's true, except that the process has changed, the goals have changed, the wording has changed, and these organizations are pushing this, and American Planning Association is one of the worst ones. Your county commissioner, maybe a guy runs for office, and he's a good guy, he just wants to do good things in the community, and as soon as he gets in there, he is sent off to a national organization, you know, like the, if it's your mayor, it's the National Conference of Mayors. If it's your governor, it's the National Governors Association. If it's your county commissioner, there's a, you know, national organization for them. They go there and they hear exactly the same mantra coming from the podium from exactly the same NGOs. And then he comes home. I mean, they even give him sample legislation when they're there and promises of all kinds of help. They come home and the same NGOs surround them at home. And so this is all they hear. And so they begin to think, this is the proper role of government. And they never question it. And they begin to put these programs in place.
Well, they're certainly active all over the country. Tom, just off the top of your head, and this probably isn't something you know, but you might, just off the top of your head, how many regional planning organizations are there throughout the nation? Do you have a number on that just by chance?
No. I would bet there are thousands of them.
Yeah.
You know, it depends on what level, and so many regional ones. But every major metropolitan area will have one. But now you're seeing, like I was talking about in Tennessee, there's rural areas that are tied in. Is you or one of you mentioned about the communities that weren't producing well. Well, they put them together in the regional groups, and now they'll be much more productive.
Well, Tom, there's a multi-layered factor taking place with this Agenda 21, and you're saying the reinvention of government. And one of the things that has come out by some of the work done by several other men, they've been showing us that all our cities and counties and states and everything are all corporations. That in their own right makes them another governmental. They act with another form of government. I mean, they come under the rules of corporatism. And with that corporatism, then they come under other aspects of how they work monetarily. And we're having to, I'm finding I'm having a hard time trying to re-educate people into looking at this process, because often they use these special districts and other means to take the taxpayers' money out and fund these projects and districts and the like, which takes them often out of the purview of the voting public, and they now take on the aspects of a corporation where they only can exist if they make money. But when they don't make money, then they go back to the public to fund them when they don't make it. Do you pay attention to this aspect of it?
I'm not an expert on this area of it. I've had a lot of people talk to me about it, guide me on, you know, send me to various information and so forth. It's not something I can talk to expertly, but I've been told that a lot of these communities that are operating that way actually have all kinds of hidden funds,
right.
Much more money than any of us know about, and that sort of thing. So I can't talk intelligently about it, but I have heard these things. Yeah.
Right. And so and if we can incorporate, not only just in informing people about this Agenda 21, which is an international setup of control, so are corporate. The money has gone out of the country, but now it's starting to come back in. But if they can convince the public that they're broke, then we will let go of our lands and our commons and our homes for next to nothing, and when we may have the money within our own communities if we know how to look for it and utilize it. And that is their purpose in this process. But a corporation is its own entity unto itself, And once we realize that that connect, in its, all they care about is themselves, and they, but they utilize the labors of the people and take their money. So we need to be aware of this along with this Agenda 21, because I think they're working hand in hand.
But it's, again, it's all an agenda.
Mm-hmm.
It's a transformation of our country, transformation of human society, really, and how we operate. It's a new kind of government, reinvented government. It's all leading towards global governance. And, you know, there's a difference between global governance and global government. They don't use the word government. They use governance. The infrastructure is such that you still have the United States, you still have the state governments, you still have your local governments, but again, this word harmonize comes up. They all work together, and so that's the governance side of it. But ultimately, the real agenda is handed down from on high from the United Nations and that source. One of the things that people don't realize is, you'll talk to people about the United Nations, and they'll say, well, America needs to be a member of the United Nations because, you know, our veto on the Security Council is what keeps us in control of our own destiny, and we've got to be there. If we're not, otherwise, you know, we wouldn't be there to vote for ourselves. Well, a couple of things. First of all, if the United States was not a member of the United Nations would cease to exist. That's just a fact. And so if we aren't there, they're not going to be passing this stuff down and doing anything to us because they couldn't. The other thing is that there are plans to do away with the Security Council and our veto in there. What they want to do is replace it with a Council of the People. And, you know, again, this goes down to becoming a government. And this is our representative now, the Council of the People, for us, the average person. Guess who will populate the Council for the People? The NGOs, the Sierra Club, the National Education Association, Planned Parenthood. These will become our representatives in the world government. That's the plan, what they want to do. So this is not a pretty picture that's coming together, but those NGOs are in your local community now, and they, the stakeholder councils, they call themselves stakeholders, and, you know, they are the ones who are driving these policies. So your ability to have anything to say about what government does to you is getting less and less. Our founding fathers set up this nation so that your local government had the most influence on you, and you had the most influence on it. And that you could get to your elected officials. If you didn't like what they're doing, you could vote them out. That is where they are focusing. That is where the change is taking place. And once that's accomplished through these NGO groups, through these regional governments, through these planning boards and so forth, then America has totally been transformed, and it no longer exists as the way that we...
One of the things that I've been seeing them pushing for with these corporations is they're getting these corporations to partner up with NGOs. And this is, I'd read a book called The Cloak of Green back in their first part of this, in 2001 or 2002. And that Cloak of Green was about these NGOs and how they functioned. And they were using these to go into these countries and circumvent many aspects of the resources and agendas to let these corporations operate how they wanted to, and they worked hand in hand because there was no oversight over the NGOs at that point. So these are not
oversight over them now.
Well, and that may be the case. It's still working for them. So we
absolutely. This is the key. The NGOs are the key to everything, and that tied to the public-private partnerships with corporations. Corporations in partnership with government, and it is also corporations in partnership with the NGOs. And, the NGOs dictate the policy. They come up with it, and then everybody else carries it out. The corporations that play ball in all this get special privileges. Now we have a new corporate entity being created in state after state called benefit corporations. The best way to describe that, if you can imagine, a corporation that gets to go to the front of the line, you know, for permits, for tax breaks, for special privileges, and what they get in return, you know, for they get all that in return for pledging to implement the policies of sustainable development. And so this is what we've got 6 states already that have implemented these things. We've got 5 more that are looking into it, and that's going to spread across the country. That's a whole new kind of corporation, and that is in partnership with government and with these NGOs, and they get guaranteed profits and guaranteed protection.
Okay, you came out with an article just recently in January on the Global Poverty Act. Does this tie into this whole thing?
Absolutely.
And
what they're working towards with the Global Poverty Act is to create global taxes for the United Nations. The United Nations was a voluntary organization that members joined, and they paid dues, and those dues were to, you know, enable the UN to have money to operate with. The UN, from its beginning, has lusted after the idea of being able to collect taxes on a global scale. And what they're looking at, in the Global Poverty Act, they're looking for, I believe it's 0.75% of our gross national product as the tax to go in there, several billion dollars just from the United States alone, that would go into their coffers. And there's another tax called the Tobin tax, which is a tax on every international transaction of money. So all the stocks that you buy, any monetary transactions and so forth, they would get some tiny little piece of that, but it would translate on a global scale to billions of dollars. Once the United Nations gets the power to tax, then it has it already has a court system, has the UN Criminal Court. Then they get its own IRS operation to collect the taxes, or it gets a military capability. It is now a global government. So to give the United Nations the ability to tax is the worst possible thing that we can do. That we will absolutely establish a global government. And the taxes they want to collect, they want to have taxes on every airline ticket that you buy. They look out at the earth as the global commons, that it's their domain. And so anything you do on earth would be taxable by the United Nations. So they would control space exploration. They would control any exploration of oil underneath the surface of the water, for example, of the ocean. The Law of the Sea Treaty has a provision in it that the United Nations, if you were, say, Exxon, and you did all the work to discover oil in a certain area under the sea, you would have to take those plans to this United Nations entity, and it would either approve it or not. But here's the part most people don't realize. That UN entity could take you, they could deny you that permit, they could take your plans, know all the research that you've done, and go do it itself, and take the oil itself and make the profits from it. So, that's what we're looking at.
Maggie?
No, well, it's just a mind blower to me. I just, there will be no private property, it'll be their property.
Yeah, you'll just global commons. And this is key, yep. Maggie, this is key. For people to understand, you hear the word community used over and over and over again. I heard it in church last Sunday, community. They're not talking about our town. They're talking about the global commons. They're talking about the common good. And that is, again, they're getting people to say this over and over again, that everything is just, we're all in this together. It's one kumbaya hug. It's a socialist utopian nightmare that destroys the individual, destroys private property, destroys individual liberty, and that's what we're looking at here.
Well, the interesting part about this is a lot of it's being sold to help the poor around the world, but in the meantime, they're pushing this population control issue. I mean, they're talking out of both sides of their mouth. And if we're not...
Well, they're total liars. As we're sitting here talking, I'm looking on the internet, and I was just reading an article about the number of foreclosures, of course, will now be increasing again because they've waded through, so they claim anyway, all of the mess associated with that MERS system, the Mortgage Electronic Registration System. And then in another column, you read how they're talking about, gee, is the housing recovery, is it on its way? The full tilt housing recovery, the only tilt it's heading to is off a cliff. That's the only tilt, because the goal isn't to have more, it's to have less and less of us in that less.
You know,
they will tell you anything you want to hear.
Yeah, they're talking about all these human rights treaties and the like, and yet they're wanting to implement smart grid meters, which will take away our rights to be able to utilize the resources that are out there. They want to be able to dictate to us our ability to use any of our resources, and at the same time, those meters are being put in place. I've been told by those that are working around those that they have to wear shields. So if you got an apartment building with a lot of these meters on there, I can imagine what it's like to be standing near one of these things or living near one of them.
Yeah,
Go ahead.
My friend is in Texas, and in fact, this was just, I think it was yesterday. He saw the guy from the electric company out working on a couple of houses down from him, and he said, "What are you doing?" And the guy said, "Well, I'm installing new meters." And he said, "Well, are those smart meters?" And he said, "Yeah, they are." He said, "Well, I don't want one on my house." So my friend went in and he called the electric company and he told them, and blah, 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 he didn't want it on his house. And so he told the guy, he said, "You're not putting that on my house." And he cited different things and that kind of stuff. "You can't put it on yet. I don't want it." Anyway, my friend went out to get a sandwich, and he was gone about a half an hour, and when he came back, there was a smart meter on his house.
Yep. And what were you going to say?
In Naperville, Illinois, they were going around putting these on, and they had a neighborhood of about 240-some houses. 16 people said they did not want these on their homes. "Do not put it on my home." And the response from the Naperville city government was to send a police escort out with the installers. This ain't freedom.
No, it isn't at all, Tom.
What you're saying about the radiation, they're now finding more and more of that being the case, that these are a health hazard. And let me tell you this. The reason why they are so desperate to put these meters on your home, these smart meters, beyond the fact that they will be able to control your energy, and that is a major tenet of sustainable development, that they are controlling your energy use. But the reason that they need to do that more than anything else is because they're bringing onto the grid wind power and solar power, which is completely unstable. And if you get into peak energy use and, the wind stops blowing and the sun goes down, you suddenly have a major problem on the grid because you have unstable source on the grid. They have got to be able to control how much energy you're using to protect the grid, and that's one of the main reasons that they're pushing to put the smart meters on. Instead of building a nuclear power plant or a coal-burning power plant that takes up 2 or 3 acres of land and provides for millions of people, instead we're putting up windmills that not only are Cuisinarts in the air that kill birds by the millions, but they are also, you have to have massive numbers of these to make up the same amount of electricity, and that means paving the earth in order to do that. If you wanted to make up the energy shortage in California alone right now with wind power, you would need an area the size of Connecticut. That means cement. It means infrastructure. It means a forest of windmills on a massive scale. And, they tell me that I'm an AstroTurf crowd that wants to pave the earth because I don't like windmills.
Yeah, right. It's too much, the stuff they come up with.
Well,
it really is too much.
The whole idea of being, but it also comes back to being to control. Now, that's the first time I'd ever heard this aspect about why they wanted to do these smart meters was because of the unstableness of it, because some of the aspects and arguments that I've been hearing on my end on these windmills and solar and the like was that a lot of these companies that were polluting were being able to offset their pollution by putting up these windmills and solar, and there was no incentive to put up a good infrastructure there. It didn't matter what they put up. It didn't matter if it broke down and didn't run. And this is one of the things that I've seen going across the country when I see these windmill farms. A lot of them aren't even turning. So you have
that has been the case.
And so you have to wonder about, you know, the technology that we're even being sold and being put out there into the public. And then, okay, so then they accomplish several things when they do that. So they can turn around and tell us, oh, it doesn't work. Well, you know what? I have a feeling that they've got technology out there that they haven't even come close to introducing to the public. If they do to us with the wind and solar technology that they do to us with the cell phones and the computer technology, then I want to know what they really have, because it just drives me crazy how they keep giving us their antiquated technology and just waiting for the next thing, that the new and better and the improved operating system or computer or cell phone, when we know they have had much better technology out there for quite a while. But that's just my rant.
they control it. We're talking about population control here. We're talking about energy control. If you control the population, then you don't need massive infrastructure. I mean, if you're going to cut the population by 85%, you don't need it. Well, so they come up with that goal. And then they begin to put an infrastructure together to live by that goal, even though we haven't gotten rid of 85% of the population. And, you know, you've taken the most industrialized nation on Earth that needs the most power on Earth, and you're cutting it off its knees where it has no power.
Right.
And you have no alternative except these stupid windmills that don't turn, when the wind isn't blowing. And
no, they don't work.
Work when the sun's not shining.
You need a little electricity to get them going when the wind's not working, Tom.
But there's also
the wind
that reminds me. That reminds me of a funny story. I was at a conference put on by the Heartland Institute on global warming last year. One of the scientists got up and he's talking about a college student that came to him and said, "We have got to stop. We've got to stop using coal right now. It is filthy. We've got to stop using it right now." So the scientist says, "Okay, I'll bite. What do we replace it with?" And this college student said, "Well, electricity, of course."
Yeah, right.
Thank goodness we have higher education.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, isn't that the truth? Boy, I'll tell you.
Well, you know, one of the other aspects, too, that when you have to start looking deeper, I'm not an expert on this, but I have to shake my head and wonder, okay, so they're drilling all these gas wells. They're drilling all this. They have a lot of wells that have been capped up since the 40s for gasoline or oil. And so you wonder, okay, what is their agenda behind this? What are they sitting on? Why are they going over to foreign countries when they may even have it here? So there's so many different angles to this that we just have to keep digging and calling on, you know, calling them on it. But again, getting back to culminating our interview, because we're just about to the end of it, and Agenda 21 has been our focus here with Tom and your American Policy Center. And so any closing comments on this or summations here?
Well, this is the goal of Agenda 21 and sustainable development is to transform our society, all human society. And this is what we have to recognize. And when your city planners and your local elected officials keep telling you that this is all a local process and they're just looking for ways to look to the future, don't we need to do that? Look to the future of how our community grows. They're lying to you. This is part of Agenda 21, And what it's going to result in is higher prices of your energy. It's going to run into, controls over your energy use and your water and your and development in your community. And you'll have no say in how that's done. And that's the bottom line here. It doesn't matter whether it came from the United Nations or not. We're just pointing that out because that's where it's come from. But the end result is what they're doing to you, to your private property, to your individual rights, to your constitutionally guaranteed rights, rights you were born with. They're taking it away. They're changing the very structure of the United States to fit, as we talk about, harmonize with other socialist nations of the world, all with a top-down control. That's what this is about. And you've got to learn that. And if you're gullible enough to believe your elected official when he tells you that I'm the crazy one, that's fine. Call me anything you want to call me, but look it up, because that's what I did. That's what I've done for the last 20 years, is I have studied their documents. I don't have a creative enough brain to come up with the garbage that these guys come up with every day. And so I'm just reporting on it. I'm just the one rude enough to tell you what they're doing. Look it up. I'm totally open with that. Look up Agenda 21 on the United Nations website and compare that with your local planning commission and see the similarities.
And Maggie, any closing comments?
No, just do something. That's all. Got to do something. You can't sit on the sidelines. That's all I have to say. Do something. Get involved.
Well, and if we take on these this Agenda 21, then why did we have this great country of the United States to have the ability to control our government and have private property rights? Because this isn't what Agenda 21 is about. So I want to thank Maggie and Tom DeWeese.
You're welcome.
For coming on the program today and helping to, I hope, broaden the scope of what Agenda 21 is all about. And, again, your website, Maggie, is?
TheUnsolicitedOpinion.com. Three words, TheUnsolicitedOpinion.com.
And, Tom, yours is?
AmericanPolicy.org.
Okay, and thank you very much.
Take care, Tom. Good to talk with you.
Thank you.
Bye, Mel.
Bye.
Thank you.
Uh-huh.